This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right, let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. We continue. It is Wake Up Call. It is hour number three on a football Monday, and also a baseball Monday, too. As I know, four cities are on waiting to see the results of tonight's game. Will we have a Game 7 in the National League Championship Series with the Phillies taking on the Diamondbacks in Philadelphia? Citizens Bank Park, a place they do not lose, but a loss tonight would bring us a Game 7 in the NLCS. It'll be Aaron Nola getting the start for the Phillies. Merrill Kelly will go for the Diamondbacks. He got roughed up in the Game 2 outing. Hopefully for a better outcome for Arizona tonight. Then there is a Game 7. That's at Minute Maid Park. The home team has not won a game at all in this series as the Rangers won 9-2 in Game 6 last night. Adolis Garcia with a grand slam in the top of the ninth inning. It was a 4-2 game going into the ninth. They scored a run, made it 5-2, and then the grand slam made it 9-2, and it was a comfortable win for Texas, but it wasn't comfortable for a good portion of that game as the Astros are trying to get back into the World Series. We've got Monday Night Football tonight. The 49ers taking on Minnesota. Minnesota's having a struggling year this year. San Francisco is coming off their loss to Cleveland. Christian McCaffrey is going to try to play. Debo Samuel is out with a shoulder injury. Offensive lineman Trent Williams is out, but people still like San Francisco to bounce back and win this game tonight. We're going over week number 7 in the NFL. I was talking earlier about Atlanta and the Buccaneers. We did a little digging, and Arthur Smith did say that Bijan Robinson only had one carry for 3 yards and then didn't play, and then people were wondering why he didn't play, but the reality was he wasn't feeling well. Yeah, all right. I mean, feeling well, it's all a degree, right? I mean, some people play okay when they're not feeling well. Some can't, hold anything in. So Arthur Smith decided to keep him out. They won anyway. And if the Falcons now have a lead in the division where, goodness gracious, I mean, 8-9 might win that division. I mean, the teams are really mediocre at best between Atlanta, Tampa Bay, and New Orleans, with Carolina the outlier at 0-6. But there were a couple of outcomes yesterday that were a little eye-popping to me. I mean, I thought that the New England Patriots, look, I always get concerned with New England when they struggle and struggle and struggle, because I do know that they do have a way of bouncing back. I just didn't think they would do it against Buffalo. The Bills have been feasting on New England since Tom Brady left the Patriots. Since that switch where Brady used to feast on everybody, the Bills have really taken their... They've won six of the last seven meetings, including a playoff game against the Patriots since the 2000 season when Brady was down in Tampa. But yesterday, the Patriots and Mac Jones in particular played well enough in the fourth quarter to come and bounce back and give the Patriots a win that in the end might not be meaningful to them, as they're likely to still struggle the rest of the way. But it is very important for Buffalo, because the Bills, they are one of the better teams in the AFC. But if you keep hanging around and putting yourself in position to be around a team like the Browns at 4-2, but not on top of the division, like a Colts at 3-4, but not on top of the division, the Steelers at 4-2, but not on top of the division. If you're the Bills and you are playing around with one of the three wild cards, don't mess around, right? Don't mess around. Get enough so that you're not dealing with a situation where a couple of losses and you're out of the playoffs because you let games like this slip on by. Speaking of the Steelers, they are 4-2. They're probably one of the weaker 4-2 teams in terms of offense. They did get Deontay Johnson back. He certainly helped. The running game worked for Pittsburgh near the goal line. They had two rushing scores, Jalen Warren and Najee Harris. Towards the end of the game, they had a fourth down quarterback sneak that I did not think picked up the first down, but indeed the officials spotting the ball did give it to Pittsburgh. They were able to then go on to beat the Rams 24-17. LA was trying to get the ball back to try to go down the field, but the Steelers still worry me enough as an offense that you just cannot win. You can't win football games like this all the time, where the defense is going to just get the job done for you most of the time. It's a better offense than it's been. I think Johnson's addition certainly helps, but it's still a team that's 4-2 and sort of playing with, hey, I don't know how we're here, but we're here. And if we get better offensively, then we've got six games that are already in the books, and we have a very good record in those six games. Told you last week, the Baltimore Ravens are a team that feels like they should be 7-0. Right, they are 5-2, but they feel like they let two games slip away, which is normal in the NFL. But they are really clicking. That game against the Lions did not go as expected. I thought it would be a good back-and-forth fight and ended up not being that way whatsoever.
And that's why I brought up the fact, I mean, I think this is the toughest division now because, you know, the Steelers are finding ways. That defense is getting better. Yeah, you know, that offense still needs work, but it's a growing process for them. You know, it's probably slower than you would like, but it is continuing. I mean, there's not a whole lot of setbacks, I guess what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, exactly. And listen, I mean, you're talking, like I was mentioned earlier, so you're Buffalo. All right, you find yourself a game back of Miami. Okay, fine, it's just a game. I get it. And you've already beaten Miami.
Right.
But they struggled against the Giants. They struggled against the Patriots. They should have been 2-0 instead of 1-1 in those games. Buffalo has a tendency to sort of hurt themselves in a lot of ways. So if that trend continues and you find yourself going, hey, you know what? We're in the wild card. Where now you're in the wild card right now. I know it's very early. We're only 7 games into the season and we've got 10 more to go. But you're hovering around the Jets, the Steelers, the Browns, Cincinnati, Houston, Indianapolis, the Raiders. Like you're one game or tied with a whole bunch of these teams for 3 spots. You're too good to be swimming in that pond, right? Like they should be a wild card 1A by a few games.
Yeah.
Right? Like if the Dolphins win the division at, let's say, 13-4, then the Bills should be 12-5 ahead of that large group that's fighting for a wild card spot. But the team that intrigues me the most in the AFC right now is the Bengals. Because if Burrow is healthy, they're rocket ship. And what does that mean? Because if you're talking a Ravens team that's playing well, the Bengals, Steelers, and Browns all in this division, like someone's going to be last. I think it's going to end up being Pittsburgh. I think in the long run, I think this offensive woes is going to hurt them more. But
I don't know.
All right.
I think it might be Cleveland.
It could be Cleveland because they're got an engine that's running too hot with P.J. Walker.
Right, and Cleveland's defense is good. I will give them that. They are keeping them in games. But even yesterday, you let Gardner Minshew get 38 points on you.
Right.
You know, and
he needed a block field goal from Miles Garrett. And then a controversial call that kept the Browns' drive alive when that game was sealed by Indianapolis.
Yes.
Receiver was going down the field and he turned into the defender. And the defender kind of grabbed and fell backwards and they called a flag on a play on their end that the quarterback had fumbled the ball after getting hit and Indianapolis recovered. But penalty down here gives the Browns
but
new
see,
life.
I'm with you. I mean, Cincinnati, I mean, they're last right now. But you know during this bye week, they're going to sit there and go, guys, we're the Bengals.
Exactly.
What are we doing
here? We're rolling now. Let's start clicking. We're already back to 500. Mm-hmm. Burrow is healthy. All right, let's not mess around.
Got a week off at the right time for our
if
team.
If you believe your problems are just because your quarterback was hurt and now your quarterback is not hurt anymore, if that's the only thing in your brain as to why you're 3-3, look out. They're going to win like 6 of the next 7 games.
And the thing is, this quarterback, he's already proven that he's one of the elite quarterbacks in the league. So he doesn't need to go out there and show you what he's got. He just needs to go out there and perform.
Right.
He's already proven what he can do. And so, yeah, I mean, they're going to keep rolling. They're going to start rolling. Do they catch up to the Ravens? I think so.
Yeah.
You know, and I think they'll blow past the Steelers. Sorry.
Yeah, I do too. No, I've no problems. The Steelers are not a great team. They're 4-2. They're winning games, tough out winning games, grinding it out. But they're winning games despite the offense not being that great. I mean, this was a better performance than they've had all season. But again, Deontay Johnson coming back allows him to get some coverage because they were double teaming George Pickens all season because there was no other threat to throw to. But now they've got 2 guys that he can throw to now.
And that probably helped Pickens out.
Right.
You know, I mean, when you get double teamed like that and you want the ball, you got to figure out ways to better yourself to get that ball.
Exactly.
And he did in a couple of games.
Exactly. So we have got Miles Simmons coming on from Pro Football Talk to talk about that coming up at the bottom of the hour. We'll talk a lot about the NFL, including a Monday night's game, his thoughts on that, and week number 7. You've probably tried pain relief creams, right? Most of them, they barely work, if at all. Are you ready for try something different? Well, I found it. It's called Capsiva. Capsiva is a scientific breakthrough in joint pain relief by capturing the medicinal power of capsaicin while eliminating the burn and smell. It absorbs fast, no odor, and it works. Capsiva is homeopathic with natural active ingredients. Capsiva has a use-it-all 100% money-back guarantee. Use the entire thing, and if you're not satisfied, you can send it back for a full refund. Capsiva has no known side effects, no known drug interactions, so it's safe to take on with your other medications, unlike some of those other pain relief creams. Stop living in pain. Go to get some Capsiva now. You can find it at Meijer, Kroger Pharmacy, and select CVS stores. All right, so we'll continue to talk about Week 7 in the NFL. Again, it wasn't the most stellar weekend. Even last night's game. I thought last night's game could be exciting, but once, you know, with Howard and Jalen Ramsey not playing and kind of knew that going into the game, I thought, all right, well, that's kind of, yeah, that's going to be a problem. But I thought the Dolphins could be like, screw it, don't worry, we'll match him offense for offense. It really wasn't that, but again, I like Mike McDaniel's thought process on it. You know, sometimes you learn from losses. They're going to try to learn from losses. They're still a very good team. I thought it meant more to Philadelphia last night because I think the Eagles knew that they had not been playing their type of football, and people were going, when are we going to get the sort of complete game, Sirianni? And he's like, how about this? How about beating Miami? Does that do it for you, everybody? Yeah, 6-1. And now the only two 6-1 teams in the league, San Francisco could be 6-1 tonight. They're 5-1 now. But right now, the only two 6-1 teams are the teams that met in the Super Bowl last year. So can you take a snapshot of that and just enjoy it for a split second before the 49ers roll over the Vikings tonight and join the party? All right, we'll continue with Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio. Again, hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's and your thoughts on not only Week 7, but again, the two Major League Baseball games tonight as the playoffs roll along as well. And also the NBA regular season kicks off this week. So we got a lot in October. It's Wake Up Call.
Listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Alrighty, as we roll along this morning, again, Miles Simmons will join us Pro Football Talk. We will talk about the games that happened over the weekend. And we do have baseball also tonight. So is there a fun feeling in Houston, nervous feeling in Houston with Game 7?
I haven't ventured over to that side yet, but I'm going to imagine this, that it's got to be a nervous feeling because, like you said earlier in the show, and it's on point, they can't score at home.
Yeah, yeah. Our good friend Jeremy Branham over there at ESPN Houston, he posted on Twitter last night, he goes, look, this series was always going 7. And I'm like, yeah, I can see that. That's a good
point. Was it?
Yeah. I don't know, man. It felt like it.
No, I know, man. I get that this was going to be a tough series. I
mean, once the series was 2-0, it was hard to believe, though. It was hard to believe the Astros wouldn't 4 straight against Texas.
I guess. But you know? But what I didn't
don't
anticipate.
Have the starting pitching to win 4 straight.
But what I didn't anticipate was, hey, Rangers, you're going to win 2 on the road. Astros, you're going to win 3 on the road. Rangers, you're going to get that next one on the road that none of you guys can defend home.
Right. So you didn't expect that.
I didn't expect that.
Yeah. No. No doubt. No doubt. I mean, listen. You know, maybe the idea behind it was, again, it didn't come at the beginning of this series. If somebody had said this series is going 7, maybe it came when the Rangers won the first two games. You know, like, look, the Astros aren't going away. They're not getting swept. They're not losing in 5. So if they're not losing in 5, are they losing in 6? Probably not. So it's probably going 7. But
at the beginning of the series, I thought, you know, it was like, hey, I always look at a series like this. It's like, unless a team has just been dominant all season long, hey, you're most likely going to get a split in the first two.
Right, right.
You know, that tends to happen more.
Once the Rangers took the first two, it's like, okay.
Yeah.
You know.
Man, we had serious conversations about it. Like, you know what? This could be over quickly. They just got to win 2 games at home. Two out of the three.
At home.
And they've already proven that they can beat them.
Yeah, that's the other thing, too. It's like, okay, everyone's like, well, the Astros can't win at home. Well, the Rangers didn't win at home either. Like, why aren't they getting scrutinized for not pulling the deal off in Arlington?
Yeah, because now they're not at home. So now that's, you know, it's open season for Game 7. It's like, hey, we're going to win.
Well, and everyone's like, the Astros are great on the road. Well, the Rangers have been pretty good on the road, too. It's like, this is a 3-3 series where all the road teams have won the entire series. If that trend continues, wasn't that the Nationals World Series?
Yep, and the Astros, yeah.
And the Astros, yeah.
Went
is
7.
Is it more comfortable to be on in a in a, on a road environment? Is it more comfortable to be like, look, we're in a hotel, we're all together, we're chilling out?
Is there more pressure on you to perform in front of your fans?
We didn't bring the family with us. We don't have to hear them yapping at us all the time. We're not going home to the neighborhood. We're just, you know, sequestered in these hotels, focused on the task at hand. Don't have to run my kid to Little League at 2 o'clock in the afternoon before I boogie over to the ballpark or whatever, which I doubt you would do.
Now, that if is
I was,
amazing.
I wouldn't do one household chore if I was in the playoffs.
That series is amazing.
I know.
To look back on and go, you know, went 7 games, neither team won at home.
Yeah, right.
And now we have another game here, or another series here, is going 7 games. Will the home team finally pull one out?
We'll see.
So, yeah, I think people here in Houston, I think they would be more nervous than anything, just because they, you know, this might be PTSD for them.
I have not followed this. Do we have a Mattress Mac betting story? Like, does he have the, like, $10 million on the
probably,
Astros winning it all or
probably,
something?
I think the last time we heard from Mac was his war against the Twins.
Right, but he also made $75 million on the last year's Astros team winning it all, didn't he? Didn't he fly to pick up his money in like duffel bags? Remember that story? Won like $75 million.
The Astros winning the series last year. He plunked down. This was story came from September 15th this year. He plunked down $2 million in his latest bet.
Okay, on the Astros to win it all.
I think so.
So tonight's the night. To continue that dream.
He almost in a way, he doubled down. He had placed a $1.9 million bet at the beginning of the season for the Astros to win it all. Now he's placed another $2 million to win the World Series.
Okay, so he put $1.9 million for the Astros to win it all and went, that's not enough. But then he probably got some good odds and just rolled with a $2 million bet with a different set of odds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it says same odds.
He got the same odds.
It was plus.
So wait, he put. That's weird. That he put $1.9 million because the circumstances are whatever, and then they change. So when did he put the money down?
So
if he put it down at the beginning of the season, you might go, "Oh, the Astros are favored," but here's the odds. But when you eliminate a bunch of teams,
then
he throws $2 million on, the odds change.
The $1.9 million was when he got plus +600 odds. I'm not 100% sure what that means.
That means
they were a favorite, right?
For every $100 bet, you would get $600.
Okay. Yeah. So, and then he placed a new $2 million bet. This was back September 15th. Was that a Friday? Might have been. Somewhere around there. Because that's when the story came out. That's when he placed the bet. And it says that he got to win the World Series at the same odds at DraftKings.
Okay. So, you know what?
And this would return a $12 million payout.
Okay. So, when did he make the first bet?
March.
Oh, March. Okay. So by September, because the beginning of the season, you know, you don't know injuries and whatnot. I got 600. Then we saw I probably was still at 600, probably threw some more money down.
Mm-hmm.
Good for Mattress Mac. How come no other moguls in cities do we know about making these kind of unbelievable wagers? It's only Mattress Mac. There's nobody in like Philadelphia that's like, I got all the money on the Phillies. I put $2.3 million on the Phillies. But Diamondbacks, Phillies tonight, that's game 6. Merrill Kelly against Aaron Nola. Phillies trying to wrap it up. I said this in the beginning. I feel I really bought in to the Phillies, and now I'm glad that did not come to fruition. I'm not rooting against the Phillies. I'm not rooting for the Diamondbacks. I don't have a dog in the fight, but I wanted to see a good series, and I'm glad Arizona gave us a good series. I'm glad they did. Like, there was an inevitability to Philadelphia in those first two games because of it wasn't just the first two games against Arizona. It wasn't that. It was the way they dispatched Miami in the wild card round. It was the way they dominated the Braves in the divisional series. I mean, they just neutralized Atlanta. They knocked Atlanta all around the ballpark. And then the first two games of this series, they did the exact same thing. They were on this home run tear. Nothing can stop them. Anything, all those. And Arizona games 3 and 4 fought their way back in this series, got this thing tied. They lose game 5 when the Phillies started hitting more home runs again. But again, make it a winner-take-all thing. Make it kitchen sink. Craig Kimbrell is not likely to pitch again for the Phillies this postseason.
All right, can we go backwards real quick? Because
yes.
I found another article. This one came from the New York Post. Apparently, Mattress Mac has 4 bets going.
Okay.
So we talked about that $1.9 million at plus 600. right? Then he put down another $2 million at plus 600. But on September 27th, he put $1 million down when they were plus 1,100.
Oh, so when they were struggling.
When they were struggling, didn't look like they were making it, he put another $1 million down.
Huge dogfight between Texas, Seattle, and the Astros.
And then just before the ALDS started, he put another $2 million down, plus 450.
Okay.
If he wins all of these bets combined, all four of these bets, he stands to win $43.4
million. Wow.
On just $6.9 million in wages.
Fantastic. They got a good shot to do that.
And because he does this, you know how he doubles down, kids. If, you know, everyone in Houston can go to one of his stores. I mean, probably outside of Houston can go to one of his stores and buy some furniture.
No one is from Houston.
I know. No, I forget that.
You are.
But if you're driving this way.
I'm sure a lot of people are like, well, I would love to have bought furniture in Houston, but I do not live in Houston. I live in Illinois. I live in Arizona. I live in other places than Houston.
How about this, Tony? If you need a couch, come on over, drive to Houston.
Hold on. You need to say he's doubled it down by providing the people of Houston with an opportunity to get furniture rather than giving a deal to people that cannot use it.
So, you know how it works. If he wins, you win. If the Astros win, you win, basically. You get your furniture for free.
Yeah.
If you don't win, or if the Astros don't win, then you don't get that rebate.
So he's hoping to sell $6 million worth of furniture to go up against the $6 million that he put down.
I remember you and I talking about this once because, the buying of mattresses is a scam.
Yeah, there's a million of them in every town.
And, I mean, he's done this year after year after year. He's, 2017 was the first time I really remember doing it. And I know he has furniture, but, it's Mattress Mac. That's his name. These say, you're not getting new clientele to buy mattresses every single year, right?
Sure.
I don't know. Right. I don't know how the mattress game works.
Yeah, I don't know how the mattress game works. I'm sure. I bought a new mattress 5 years ago, and I don't think I'll buy another one until I die. I don't think I'll need one. It's fine.
I mean, we have an old mattress that we've had for years and years.
Probably not going to change it.
We
right?
just put a mattress topper. We've replaced the mattress topper on top of it.
All right.
That does wonders.
Well, there you go. Mattress Mac probably gets more airtime on this show than he does in Houston. I love Mattress Mac. I think his story's amazing.
It really is.
It really is wild. He's got some, for a rich guy, even for a rich guy, that's a lot of bets. It's a lot of money. I don't like losing 10 bucks in a slot machine. $6 million on the Astros.
This is Brett Musburger, and you are listening live to Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio with my main man, Tony D.
All right, let's go to our Progressive guest line. Progressive Insurance, round out your protection with life, phone, and pet health insurance. Visit progressive.com. Miles Simons joins us from Pro Football Talk to talk some NFL. Week number 7. How are you, Miles?
I'm doing well, man. How are you?
I'm good. All right, takeaway yesterday from the Lions-Baltimore game. I mean, listen, everyone deserves a dud every now and then, but there was something larger about the way the Baltimore Ravens are playing this year, and maybe something that the Lions did not have in a game like this on their schedule.
Well, I think that they didn't have enough juice, I guess, one way that you can put it, which is like a little too general and broad. But when you lose like they did and only score 6 points, and sometimes that happens where you just have an absolute clunker. And I think when that does happen, and especially when it's against a non-common opponent, I mean, Detroit's not going to play Baltimore very often. They're not going to see them again, like this year or next year, unless they both reach the Super Bowl. So that's one of those games where that kind of thing can happen, where you're just like, man, we're unfamiliar with what this is and what the personnel is and like how fast Lamar Jackson is and how well he can process and go to these different things. So those are the kinds of things where you get those mismatches and that's what happens. I'm not that concerned about it if I'm Detroit. I mean, yeah, you don't want to see that happen, but Dan Campbell said it yesterday. It allows you to refocus, recommit yourself. I think Detroit is still one of the best teams in the NFC, and I think that they will right the ship next week when they play the Raiders on Monday Night Football.
Is it now time, though, with the Ravens? Because they've always been a team where you're like, yeah, but they're not Burrow good or Mahomes good. They're now one of the elite teams in the NFL.
They are. You know, I don't know if I would put them completely in that upper tier. I think they are about on – I would put them on, like, the same level I would with the Lions in the NFC, where it's, okay, they're not, you know, really, really that Super Bowl contending team that I think that they could be, right? For me in the AFC right now, it's kind of like, well, you've got the Chiefs, and then – I don't know what else necessarily there is, right? Because the Chiefs have not necessarily been playing their best football, but they're still winning. I think that they played probably their most complete game of the season so far against the Chargers yesterday. I mean, you can say that, yeah, they beat the Bears and they scored 40 points and all that, but the Bears aren't a very good football team, right? And I don't necessarily know that the Chargers are either, but the Chargers can at least do some things to make you have to say, all right, we got to focus and we got to get our stuff right. But if you do, I guess, you know what, if you look at the AFC right now and the rest of it, well, you've got Miami, who I think is still really good. You know, despite that Eagles loss yesterday, I think that the final score is not necessarily indicative of how close that game really was. But yeah, you've also got Baltimore. Look, Pittsburgh has been playing very well. Jacksonville has been playing well the last few weeks. So I don't know. It's interesting. You know, I guess I don't want to put Baltimore in that upper tier, but now I'm talking myself into it where it's like, who else is there in the AFC?
This Philadelphia Eagles brotherly shove play. People want to debate this, but is there really a debate? Are they going to talk about this, but are they only going to talk about it in safety concerns, or are they going to talk about it in general as a strategical element in the game?
Well, I think it's going to be more or less safety concerns that are also going to have to do with the strategy in the game, right? If everybody could do it, and Sirianni said this last night, the Eagles head coach, if everybody could do it, then everybody would do it. They can't do it, right? The Giants did it, and they got two offensive linemen hurt on the same play.
Yeah.
I mean, that's crazy. So, you know, it makes sense that Jalen Hurts can do it because he can squat upwards of 600 pounds. Jason Kelce is the best center in football still, even as he's getting up there in age, so that's why he can do it. You've got two really, really good guards. I mean, I think it's sort of unfair to the Eagles, who have found a strategic advantage, right? And that's something that they can do. But if they can do it and nobody else can do it, well, why are you punishing them for finding a wrinkle in the strategy that works for them? I think that it's fine. I have no problem with the tush push, brotherly shove, whatever you want to call it, because it's like somebody who it's almost like having Patrick Mahomes, right? In some ways, you know, it's a bit of a cheat code. Well, if everybody had a quarterback as good as Patrick Mahomes, then that'd be great. But you're not going to outlaw Patrick Mahomes from doing the things that make him great, like rolling around and, you know, going to his right and finding a guy down the field after he, you know, gets himself out of what could be a sack situation. So why are we punishing the Eagles for saying, you know, well, when we've got 1 yard to go, we know we can do this, so we're going to do it. I don't think we should punish the Eagles for that.
That's a great point. Jordan Love with the Green Bay Packers, they lose in Denver, and he's struggling a bit now. The late interception was not a good throw. But is there enough now to make an evaluation on Jordan Love? What is your feeling on him? I mean, it's he's been in the league a while, but not as a starter. But now people want to jump down his ability to play this position.
Well, for whatever reason, right now it's not working between Matt LaFleur and Jordan Love. And I don't know what exactly the disconnect is, but I think you can see that it's pretty clear things are not fluid. And yeah, you're holding Jordan Love, I think, to a higher standard than a rookie, but he should be held to a higher standard, right? He's been in that building for 3 years before starting this season. You know, he's had the opportunity to play a little bit, and granted, it's not that he's had that many snaps, but you have to be able to judge this guy on what he's doing on the field now, and you have to say, well, if he can't get it done now, then we need to be looking at other options at quarterback, because otherwise we're just not going to be able to do what it is that we need to do to be successful. And right now, Jordan Love is not doing what he needs to do to be successful. And I think some of that does fall on Matt LaFleur. and what he's calling and how they're implementing things. But also it's Jordan Love going out there and trying to execute. When Jordan Love is good and when he understands what things, and I should say appears to understand what things are supposed to be on the field, then he can be really good. But it's just he's not stringing that together enough. It's not consistent. And when you're going against a defense that has been as bad as the Broncos has been and you can't get things done there, that's an alarming sign to me. Sure. So, yeah, it's only been 6 games for them so far this year, but it's not like the arrow is pointing up right now.
Is the situation in Cleveland with Deshaun Watson simply a shoulder injury, or is there a little bit more? Are people digging into what's happening as to why Deshaun Watson is playing, not playing well, doesn't want to play? What's the story there?
Well, I don't think it's that he doesn't want to play. I do think that, you know, last night when Kevin Stefanski was talking about it, he made it clear, like, it was my decision to keep Deshaun Watson out of the game. And, A, the first few throws that Deshaun Watson had in that game were just off. I mean, he looked as bad as he did in that Jacksonville preseason game, which was his first, you know, action back in 2022, you know, since the end of the 2020 season. So it looked really, really off, and it looked really screwy. And so I think that was part of why Stefanski said, yeah, I'm going to keep him out. And then you also had the fact that he was checked for a concussion. And then you also had the fact that, you know, his shoulder has not been right since he had what he described as the micro tear happen against Tennessee a few weeks ago. So I think that there are a multitude of things, but it doesn't seem to me like he didn't want to play. It just seems like he was ineffective. And so because of that, you have P.J. Walker, who's a guy that obviously they trust enough to be able to put him in there, and he ended up winning the game for him. So it's not a great situation right now for Cleveland with the quarterback, but hell, you know, if you're 4-2 and you can say that, it's a whole lot better than being 2-4, which easily could have happened if they lost the last 2 games.
Yeah, it's such a weird circumstance because, I mean, and I know he's riding the fully guaranteed contract, and I know his background is in and the accusations and everything doesn't make him the most popular player around, but this still is a city where Baker Mayfield couldn't overcome a shoulder injury as a main reason of not being a productive. Could he on the flip side?
Well, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's like, this is a city that Baker Mayfield's like, I've got a shoulder injury, and they're like, we don't care, bye, see you later.
But I would say that there are more things at play there with Baker Mayfield than just a shoulder injury. And, you know, Baker Mayfield did not play well in the 2021 season. I'm from Cleveland, so I, you know, hear a lot about this from people that I care about. But, you know, the game where he had 4 interceptions on Christmas against the Green Bay Packers, where if the Browns win that game, they have a really good chance at making the playoffs, and Baker Mayfield just didn't show up and perform. And yeah, I mean, the non-throwing shoulder was certainly a problem, but I think that there were a lot of other elements at play for Baker Mayfield with the Browns. And you gotta remember, at that point, that was not the regime that drafted him at number 1 overall. And so whenever something that like that happens, it's like, well, if we didn't choose this guy to be our quarterback and he's not getting it done, then why are we still messing around with this? We need to be able to see if we can find a way to improve at the quarterback position. Now, so far, it has not worked out. Right? The Browns certainly have not improved there, but it's not like Baker Mayfield was really getting it done there either. And, you know, Baker Mayfield was not good last year either, and he's playing all right for the Bucs, but, you know, let's be honest there.
You make a very good point. Always watch the regime. If there's a regime change, look for some personnel change. Good stuff, Miles. Always good talking to you, my man. Thank you so much.
All right, take care.
Miles Simons of Pro Football Talk joining us on Sports Map Radio. We'll come back. Final thoughts. And, by the way, the holiday that was a holiday that almost wasn't a holiday next.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. All right, so I'm going to get into the holiday that was a holiday that you probably don't know how it became a holiday in just a minute. So we had a full weekend of sports at baseball games, college football games on Saturday, meaningful college football games on Saturday. By the way, you know, I told you I have a friend of mine who always texts me and asks me my thoughts on games this, you know, for the weekend.
Yep.
And I tell him every time, I'm like, listen, I don't want to get into spreads. I'm not that good. I'm not a handicapper. I can just tell you if I think a team is going to win. It's up to you how you want to process that. If I think a team A is very good and I think they'll win by a lot, I'll tell you. But I don't know if they'll win by 27, like whatever the spread is. But I gave him five teams over the weekend. All five won. So I'm hoping he just did a straight up parlay on those five teams. But all five teams won. I gave him Air Force, Alabama. I gave him Utah. I gave him Michigan because I thought Michigan was going to slaughter Michigan State, and they did. Because I said, listen, they play for Jim Harbaugh. They play. Like, Harbaugh's in this little, did he send a scout to a game? Like, which is a nothing. I can't, they're trying to crucify this guy for whatever reason. But nevertheless, and I thought Michigan, and I forgot the fifth game, but did I mention Air Force? I gave him Air Force over Navy, which was a close game in Annapolis. But there was also the U.S. Grand Prix was being held with Formula One. And this is my gripe of the morning. So there was an auto race in Austin, Texas. If you don't know, Formula One is this global series. They travel around the world. There are three races in the United States. People pay a lot of money to go to these things. And Austin drew over 400,000 people over the 3 days at Circuit of the Americas. The Dallas Cowboys weren't playing. The Houston Texans weren't playing. And it was just jam-packed. I was there last year. You know, they always make these big deals about attendance at a motorsports event, but when your playing surface is like 3 miles around an area of land, you can fit a lot of people in there. Nevertheless, not to get too technical, but at the end of the race, Max Verstappen won the race. He drives for Red Bull Racing. He's had a dominating season. He's won 15 races. Lewis Hamilton, who has 7 world championships, finished second. And at one point, he got within 2 seconds of Verstappen, and they thought he could track him down. He's on fresher tires and more grippier tires, and it was kind of exciting. It was kind of a moment where the season has really gone one driver's way. At the end of the race, and this is what happens in motorsports, and it drives me up the wall. You've paid for a ticket to see an event. It's awesome. It's great. Yay! Woohoo! But because they need to know if the cars were in compliance within the rules, they do inspections. And so they did inspections at the end of the race, and 2 cars that were in the top 10 were disqualified. Now, basically, it was about height and, you know, height of the car. Well, I don't want to get too technical with it because it was a little bit more complicated. But nevertheless, the 2 cars, done, disqualified. So the result that you saw when you paid your money and you saw it come to fruition, come to the end, when you got to your car and drove home, those results were changed. Now, in a sport like this, it does matter who finishes second, who finishes fifth, because you get points in the top 10, and those points get accumulated, and you're fighting for positions in the world in the world championship and whatnot, and they matter, right? But it's like in golf when you watch a golf event, and you find out later they go, oh yeah, he broke a rule on the 6th hole, you didn't see it, but yeah, afterwards we had to disqualify the guy. It was really disheartening. But nevertheless, one good result came out of it. An American driver, Logan Sargeant, had not scored a point at all this season, but he finally got his first point because he moved up from 12th to 10th. But it really drives me crazy. You wouldn't accept this in any other sport. We would not accept this in any other sport. If you went to a football game and you watched the Super Bowl and you found out 3 hours later that there was a holding call on the last play of the game, and they were going to nullify a point for whatever, they're going to take something away, we go, no, we're not tolerating this. No. You do it right here. But there's no other way to do it.
We
you have to look at the cars
for,
afterwards.
What was it, Rams Saints?
Right.
That
yeah,
NFC
yeah,
Championship game?
You can't
game?
Do it.
We saw the video replays. That was egregious.
Exactly. Remember the guy that wanted to replay the game?
Yes.
He was putting like an act through like state Congress or something? People were losing their minds over it. But there's no other way to do it. It's one of those things where I go back and forth with it because
now we have seen things where they'll amend a stat, like they'll credit a guy for a hit. I mean, if you could change one outcome, right? I know the one on the top of my head would be this because we've talked about it many, many times, and you even came to the conclusion it wouldn't change anything at all. Would be Armando Galarraga's perfect game.
Right. You can go back and award him that perfect game. Because the next batter got out. But the problem is, like, when we talked about, they said about Barry Bonds, you know, they were like, we got to take all the home runs away. Well, like, you can't just take home runs away. Then you change the outcome of games. And then you change wins. Like, it's not a, it's a trickle-down effect.
Well, so I'll say this. One thing the NCAA has done right in the past, I mean, I hate the fact that they make teams vacate seasons, but they don't award the team like, hey, got their trophy stripped away, you're the new national champion.
Exactly.
Nope.
I used to kid about that all the time. South Carolina's only appearance in the SEC title game was against Cam Newton and Auburn. And when they were getting investigated, or Cam Newton was getting investigated, I joked that they can send me my SEC championship T-shirt any day now. And they got throttled by Auburn. But that was sort of the joke, right? That was like, that's what you kind of think, but that's not how they do it. Now, listen, I get it. Motorsports or something like that, where in golf especially, it's like, well, the only way we can do it is at the conclusion of the event. Like, if a team cheated by their car doing something that other cars are not allowed to do, then this is the only way we can do it. We can't do it in the middle of the race. We can't do it at the beginning of the race. At the end of the race, we take a look at them, and then we find out, nope, this is not within the regulations, and unfortunately, it is qualified. But it does mean that you buy a ticket to an event, and you think you've seen result X, and then you get home, and you find out, nope, that was all changed because two people got disqualified. Same in golf. If you think a guy finished third at the Masters, and you find out later on that, oh, no, he signed an incorrect scorecard, it's like, oh, really? Like, I didn't watch that guy finish third or first or fifth or whatever? I later on we find out it's one of those things that you can't help, but that's the way it goes. All right. So did you notice yesterday was National Tight Ends Day? You heard that probably over and over again. Mike Gesicki of the Patriots.
Maybe once.
Yeah.
During the Chiefs Chargers game, but that's it.
That's about it. Yeah. Well, all throughout the game, they kept saying it's National Tight Ends Day. I didn't even know there was a National Tight Ends Day, but there is. And yesterday was the holiday that the National Football League has set. And where did it come from? Well, I had to do a little research because I did not know where National Tight Ends Day came from. Maybe you did. I did not. It was started by George Kittle, but the guy that is the father of National Tight Ends Day is really Jimmy Garoppolo. Jimmy Garoppolo was the guy that phrased the term, came up with the term National Tight Ends Day, because both of his tight ends in a game in 2018, they had great games. And Jimmy Garoppolo said, what is it, National Tight Ends Day? And the NFL went, you know what? That sounds great. We're going to do that. The 49ers started selling gear. George Kittle was promoting it. They made it the fourth Sunday in the month of October. It became like a big, big deal. So Garoppolo was the guy that really started it, and now this is the league that celebrates it. You know what it reminds me of? It's like those stories when they go, you know, invented Mother's Day, Hallmark.
Yeah.
You know, like that kind of thing. But that's National Tight Ends Day for you. So Mark Andrews got a touchdown. Travis Kelce got a touchdown. Mark Gesicki got a touchdown yesterday.
Question for you.
Yeah.
Darren Waller got a touchdown?
Darren Waller got a touchdown, that's right. I'm trying to think of them all from yesterday.
I am curious. Is there a National Running Backs Day or Receivers Day?
Good point.
I mean, if we're going to celebrate one, don't we got to celebrate all?
Yep. It was Garrett Celek who scored an 11-yard touchdown. Kittle later scored in that game, and that's when Jimmy Garoppolo brought it up. And George Kittle said, yeah, it's a holiday. And the NFL went, that's a brilliant idea, George Kittle. We're going to make it a holiday. And they did. So this is to other positions in the National Football League. If it's going to feel like you're copying, but you might as well. Imitation is the best form of flattery, right? You might as well have a National Running Backs Day, National Defensive End Day, National Kickers Day, National Middle Linebacker Day, Offensive Guard Day, Assistant Coach Day, Trainer Day, Quarterback Day.
You know what this means?
Yeah.
You got to add days to the season.
That's right.
And more weeks now.
Every game. Hey, it's National Safety Day. Not the safety like be healthy, like the safety like covering wide receivers. Yeah. No, we don't want you to make sure you have a fire extinguisher in your house. We want you to celebrate great safeties in the National Football
League. Now, do you separate right guard from left guard?
Or you just make them offensive guards, yeah.
You just make them offensive line.
Only so much we can do in the season.
Yeah, or is it, yeah.
And Punter's Day, yours is in June. Sorry, there's nothing we could do. We just didn't have any room in the calendar for you. We'll continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. Talk some Major League Baseball.